Welcome to Crane Radio. Celebrate a life well lived.
Welcome to this first season of The Modern Crone, the 21st Century Shaman. I have invited the most powerful, eclectic and woke shamanic folk I know to talk with me about their take on shamanism and tap you straight into the minds and hearts of those who are the real deal 21st century shamans. Real people, real stories and a whole lot of mind-blowing, spirit-stirring juju. Hello and welcome to this edition of the 21st Century Shaman in the podcast series, The Modern Crone. It's my pleasure today to bring to the table Julian Silburn. Julian has devoted his life to sound healing and is known for his work nationally and internationally. He's learned the Yidaki, didgeridoo, directly from Aboriginal people around Australia, including Arnhem Land, where the Yidaki originates, and he has been playing for 29 years. He mainly uses the instrument in its traditional way for meditation, sound therapy, and for ceremony. Julian has also performed in a contemporary way in Australia, Europe, the USA, and Canada, collaborating with many world musicians and varied music genres. He has been given permission and blessing to play the didgeridoo and to use it for healing on his homeland, Wadjuk Noongar land, by senior elders, and has a deep respect for their incredibly rich culture and traditions. In 1997, he was invited by an Aboriginal artist to live and work with the Aboriginal people in the Northern Territory, and this opportunity greatly deepened his knowledge of Aboriginal art, stories, culture, healing, ceremonial music, and earth wisdoms. And during this time, he learned from several elders who were masters of the Yidaki and Mago that through his association, he was culturally adopted by an Arnhem Land family that has a direct lineage to the Yidaki, Mago, or the didgeridoo, which has been played for thousands of years. Today, in his life, Julian is a sound healer. He uses a variety of sound modalities, yoganada, and techniques in order to restore the body's vibration to its natural harmony and balance. Julian Silburn, such a pleasure to welcome you to the podcast. Thank you. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm well. Thanks, Danny.
So our connection was relatively recent, wasn't it? So our mutual friend Maggie Wisson knew that I was trying to connect with the Indigenous ceremony of Uluru at the 2020 solstice. And it was almost incidentally that she sent me two of your didgeridoo tracks, and they blew me away, like in terms of the vibrational resonance in them, the way that they supported the shamanic journeying. And I also shared them with my community as well, with other people in my community around the world that were keen to connect with the Indigenous ceremony on the solstice. And all of us were transported in a way that was quite unique, but also interestingly, a lot of us shared very common elements within our journeys, even though that we were sort of located all over the place, which Maggie has since summarized and shared. So I'm fascinated by, I guess, for want of a better word, the technology within the sound of the didgeridoo. You know, these sounds that come from this ancient instrument almost feel archetypal, like they're expressions of the universe and or the sort of the setup of the universe, if you like. So can we start with that? Like, why is the didgeridoo so powerful in altering your state of consciousness and opening up access to these fields of wisdom and ancestors as well?
Yeah, sure. Well, the Indigenous people, the Yolngu people of Arnhem Land, where the Yidaki comes from, They say that this is the sound of Mother Earth. This is the energy of Mother Earth. So the natural forces create this instrument. It's one of the only instruments that nature creates itself. And the termites eat out the eucalyptus and the softwood and make it hollow. And that hollow energy is very special in many ways. It's if you put your ear up to a didgeridoo, it's like it's playing itself. It's really fascinating. That's something elders have showed me, is by putting your ear to the mouthpiece of the didgeridoo, there's this vibration, almost like a rhythm. So it's very special. It's a very sacred instrument, and it is something that connects people very much with Mother Earth, because it is of the earth. It's created by the elements, it's created by, you know, beings. And when you play that didgeridoo sound, it's a drone sound, and drone sounds connect us very much with our divine essence as sound and vibration. So everything is in this world is vibration. So that sound of the didgeridoo, it echoes and it resonates with our essence. So yeah, it is a very special sound.
Absolutely beautiful. And those vibratory expressions are within us as well, aren't they? You know, that, and I think that's where it's a full body experience when you listen to a didgeridoo that's really played by a master. It's not just your auditory system, is it? It's your entire system responds to it. It's amazing. This whole idea about the technology of the dig as well, like sound healing, and it's super popular right now. If you go on Instagram, there's, you know, everyone's got a crystal singing bowl and, you know, and holding sound baths and gong baths and all that sort of stuff, which is beautiful. There's a lot of it here in Singapore. And there's also some fantastic science and more coming out about Hertz frequencies, which are synchronous with the chakra resonances, binaural beats. But it's almost talked about like it's new, like it's a new discovery. But the second you hear a dig, you realize that it's thousands of years old, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's, apart from the human voice, it's one of the, you know, absolute oldest. It's hard to actually pinpoint the exact age, but they're saying at least 10,000 years that the didgeridoo has been played. And they know that because they've, you know, found cave paintings that are, you know, 10,000 years old of people playing the didgeridoo. But, you know, it could actually be a lot more ancient than that. There was a vulture bone found in Germany that, you know, dates 60, it's, you know, a flute made out of a vulture bone that dates 25,000 years plus. So, you know, the voice is the, you know, original instrument, and, you know, often the most powerful as well, because it's your own vibratory being that is, you know, being engaged when you use your voice. And it's just so ancient. And then things like rocks being clapped together, sticks being clapped together, you know, wood on wood. There's so many, you know, if you actually look at the different instruments that have come out of the world's history, they're in the tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. So, you know, it's something that is, you know, very special, very ancient, and
and very innate, you know, innate to the human draw to express spirit, you know, in other shamanic cultures, you know, the drumming is big, and the rhythmic movement of that pulse of life, and it's innate in all of us, this this desire of the spirit to express itself in sound, isn't it? So you first heard the dig in your life, you know, as a young man, and then following that sound, you tracked into Arnhem Land. So, and started getting schooled by the elders, by the original medicine men that hold the dig. So how did that happen?
Yeah, well, it was a chain of events, but I had a big opening when I was 19. I was very interested in in spirit. From a young age, friends had given me Carlos Castaneda's books, and I was like, wow, this is just so incredible. And I believed in some of these principles, you know, maybe not in the literal stories, but, you know, the principles behind it, the shamanic principles. And same with Tibetan Buddhism. I just instantly started to want to learn and start to taste this and experience some of these different states of consciousness. So when I had that big awakening at 19, I had a lot of dreams with Indigenous people and had one key dream that really, I think, changed the course of my life. And basically I was in the dream, I found myself standing by a river. There were these big, tall gum trees and like massive, and one had fallen over and it was sort of partially in the river and the rest of it was up onto the land, and the whole tree had been hollowed out like it was a hollow shell. And it was so big that there was an Aboriginal family camped down one end of it, and it was in this giant hollow. And it was such a beautiful place. Anyway, this man around my age, he slid this very long didgeridoo down towards me, and he picked it up and he started playing it, and then he put it down, and then I just knew that I had to play it from the other end. So I picked it up and played it, and then I put it down, and then he got up from the group and he walked towards me, and then I stood up and I met him, and he actually just took me by the hand. I get kind of emotional thinking about it because it was such a moment of connection, and he just led me into the water. So it was just silence. He just took me by the hand and he just guided me into the river, and we just started swimming together, and we're just swimming deeper and deeper and deeper. And I think at a certain point I was like, hang on, I'm so deep here, how come, surely I need to breathe right now or something. So I think that's when the conscious mind came in, and I came up and out of that dream, and I was just lying there going, whoa, what just happened then? That was profound. And when I've spoken to people about it, they say, that's not a dream, that's a vision. There's a difference, you know? And so then I started meeting these Aboriginal guys that used to play didgeridoo down at some markets on a regular basis, Heath Bergenson and Derek Nanup, Indigenous guys. Phenomenal didgeridoo players, my major form, source of inspiration when I was at that time. And for many years, I just would go there on the weekend, I'd do my rounds, I'd, sit, stand and watch them, totally inspired, throw some money in their hat. And then one day I just found myself going up to one of the guys and said, oh, how do you even start to play this instrument? He said, oh, go and see Derek, He worked at an Aboriginal gallery in Perth. But I knew, based on my knowledge of, some of the shamanic knowledge of Carlos Castaneda and all of that, these dreams that I was having was putting me into a different state of consciousness. And I felt so much connected to these Indigenous people that I were meeting in the dream world, and there were more visions that came. I started walking the land with different eyes and different senses, and I knew where I needed to go, and I just went with my guidance, and I knew I had to visit certain places. I knew I had to prepare myself before I met that man. I had to connect with different places, and I walked from where I was in Fremantle, about 20 kilometres, through different parts of the land, up into a big park. I knew I had to go to special places and sit, those power places where you feel the connection and feel the ancestor energies. And at that point, I was just so sensitized, and I was so could really feel where those places were. And I would sit there and I'd have these incredible experiences and connections and feelings and knowingness and everything. And that was sort of part of my journey to go and meet that man. I knew that I had to walk the land. I had to connect with the land. I had to connect with the ancestors in preparation for that meeting. So that I read the Carlos Castaneda stuff. Apart from that, all of it was just intuitive. And then I had that connection. After a while, I ended up working for that same gallery because my didgeridoo playing had progressed. And then after that, I started meeting other didgeridoo players. I was just immersing myself in any didgeridoo music. So there's some really key didgeridoo players that really inspired me. Now, Richard Wally, Dr. Richard Wally, he's an incredible player. Mark Atkins, David Hudson, these are some key, Alan Dargan. I just couldn't get enough of their playing, and I would immerse myself and play the didgeridoo for hours and hours each day. I couldn't stop playing it. Every time I'd play it, it was like I was going on this inner journey into this, into another realm. It was like a vortex. And then I come out of it and I put the didgeridoo down and go, I'm going back in there. You know? I'm going back in because that's a nice place to be. And I realized that the didgeridoo playing not only grounded me, but it gave me energy. So it was so therapeutic. It was just like, why wouldn't you? It just makes you feel so good.
So, you know, there's so much in that. I love these stories of the call, you know, when you're being called. And it's something that really can't be denied or resisted for too long, can it? Even if you try to, you can't. But, you know, I'm fascinated by, and I've experienced it as well, a couple of things in that part of your life. And the first is the true nature of our actual dreaming. So, you know, that dream sounds like an initial initiation. All of the beautiful symbolism of being greeted and being walked into the river of your Dharma, the river of your purpose, and to follow that current is just absolutely beautiful. And being welcomed as well by an Indigenous family that were living inside a massive didgeridoo. I mean, it's just incredible, isn't it, the way that dreaming works. And that is an element that is a very significant element of all shamanic cultures, is that when we're dreaming, it's not just processing random thoughts. There's some very deep initiations and healings that are going on in our dream space. And then the other one was the instinct of you to walk the land. You know, I know that feeling, you know, I walk the land as well, and I try and get to sacred sites where I can dwell there. Not to do anything, but to add my energy and my presence to the matrix of that site or that track. And it's beyond words. You can't really explain, but you just know that it's important and it's necessary. And it is a form of initiation as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Because there's a vibrational medicine in these places that have, you know, gathered power and energy and, you know, ceremony, and, you know, that vibration, that energy is there in key places. And when you are attuned, and I'd done a lot of cleansing, and, you know, I'd got my vessel very clean and clear, and I think, you know, and doing a lot of yoga and a lot of meditation, it just tunes your psychic senses, and a lot of silence as well. And, you know, Indigenous people have had that non-verbal understanding of things, that sentiency or that way of feeling and knowing through feeling for a very long time, and so much communication was non-verbal. even psychic communication between groups. You know, I've heard incredible stories where one group will be wanting to travel to another group hundreds or thousands of kilometers away, and they'll, you know, communicate through dreams. That other group will know that that group of people is coming. It'll be very clearly, you know, understood, and they'll make preparations, like even have food ready for the day that, you know, they're going to be expecting people.
It's just so cool, isn't it? And I've read anthropological papers as well about, particularly about Aboriginal, Australian Aboriginals who also use that form of deep listening to connect with the hunt as well, and also the elements. So to find water, to identify the animals that are willing to give their life to the tribe in the hunt. And and it's beyond time and space, isn't it? Like this communication is so far reaching for the survival of the tribe as well, but also, just like you say, intertribal communications. We don't listen enough today, do we? We're just so jammed up with so much noise. This beautiful psychic spiritual ability of deep listening, we just we've forgotten how to do it, haven't we?
Yeah, and I think technology, we just rely so heavily on it now, and we don't think that, you know, there's another way of communicating. Like if you think about it, if all technology, you know, as we know it, disappeared tomorrow, you know, how would we communicate? We'd have to develop these skills. It's like a muscle. If we don't have to develop it for some reason, then we'll never develop it. So
yeah, but the good news is it can be developed, it can be cultivated, can't it? So
absolutely. Yeah. It's another type of muscle, and that, you know, with certain amount of training and time and investment of energy, then, you know, these latent capacities can be fully brought back, but it requires effort and energy and a commitment.
Yep, agreed. So the beautiful Didge, I mean, that at the beginning of our chat, you were explaining how one of the deep resonant properties of the didgeridoo is that it's formed by the earth itself, and so that the sounds that either just naturally run through it, like when you hold it to your ear, a bit like how a seashell holds the sound of the sea. You know, that's what I was thinking when you said that, and the Didge holds these whisperings of the earth, you know, so lovely. But another aspect of it is actually in the playing of it, where there you do bring in sounds of the wilderness into the soundscape of the Didge, don't you? Like there's bird call and there's wind and water. And can you tell us a little bit about that process for you as the player, and how that connects you more deeply with the lovely refractions of Mother Earth?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, some playing is purely rhythmic and there's no vocalization, and that has a different purpose. The vocalization aspect is really important for particular purposes, especially with when it's combined with the dance. So when it's in its full, and this is what I've been taught, when it's in its full power, it's, you've got the didgeridoo, the yodaki, the clapsticks, you've got the singer, and you've got the dance. And that's when it really comes alive. So depending on what the movements are and the specific dances of the music, then you'll have different calls. So for example, up in Arnhem Land, a very beautiful one is the brolga. It's this type of very large water bird, and like a crane. And they have this incredible courtship dance, and they have these incredible vocalizations. And the indigenous people imitate those dances and those vocalizations through the yodaki to accompany the dancer who's taking on the form of the brolga. So yeah, and it can be very subtle things. It can be like up in Arnhem Land, there's certain songs, and they're called manake. Manake is just a small piece. Some pieces only go for a few minutes, and they detail different phenomena or experiences or movements of nature. You know, whether it's the leaves falling at a particular time of year, there'll be a song just dedicated to that. And so that song is just that movement of the leaves falling.
So beautiful. And so in participating in that sound then, there is the idea that you're connecting with the archetypal energies of perhaps that season or perhaps the storm or perhaps, you know, is that how it works? So you sort of by ingesting the sound's not the right word, is it? You know, allowing the sound in through your energy body, you're allowing in those archetypal movements as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's always deeper layers and deeper significance of every aspect. There's layers and layers and layers. So depending on where you are in your journey with things, it'll mean one thing. And then as you get old, it's that whole spiral of knowledge that, you know, you keep on reading things, but you start to understand it on a deeper level each time you go around.
Totally. That's what's so fantastic about it, isn't it? Because it's just, it's a constant reveal, you know, if you're engaged.
Crane Leaving speaking.
I need a boyfriend.
Well, we have Senor Sombrero Asakusa-san, or if you swing that way, Antoinette is available too. Check them out on crane-living.com and enjoy 10% off with Radio 10 when you cart out.
Oh, okay.
Terms and conditions apply. Don't get too excited. These are just names of our collections. We don't work that way. If you'd like to interact with real humans, come down to our flagship store at 46 Kim Yam Road.
What's it like for you? So I'm very excited to say that you're going to give us a little sample at the end of this, our chat today. But when you're playing the didge, which I understand is also quite a skill, particularly that circular breath, you know, to be able to maintain a continuity of sound. But what does it feel like for you? I know this might be hard to describe. Are you channeling? Is that what it feels like? And my other part of that question is, do you sometimes offer the sound as an offering back to Great Spirit, to Mother Earth? So these are my two. What's it like for you? I reckon it'd feel fantastic.
Yeah, it really does feel fantastic. It's you know, it's a form of breath work. It's a form. I mean, I'd even go to say that it's a form of yoga, because it's like pranayama. It's just this constant experience of breath. And because the circular breath is constant, you're constantly in that. You're constantly in with the vibration and the energy of it. When it's played for a specific reason, whether it's for a ceremony, whether it's for a dance, whether it's for healing, there's many different contexts. You're bringing to that particular context, you know, whatever's going to support that intention, you know, whether it's for that, for those dancers, or for that singer, or for someone for healing, or whatever it may be. So yeah, there's a lot of intentionality that goes into it, and you know, I feel like a lot of compassion as well, like for where people are at, and understanding that the human journey is often very challenging and painful and confusing. And so when I'm doing my healing work, I really do it as if I'm doing it in a way, what would I want from us, you know, someone to do for me, because I feel like it's a real compassion, you know, act of compassion to work with people in this way. And definitely, for earth healing, that's something that came through another dream or another vision, was I was given a particular rhythm that is for the healing of the earth, and it's to send healing into the earth, and the earth will take that energy and use it for whatever it needs it for the most. So it'll be taken to wherever it's needed. I'd even like to share that today.
Oh, good.
maybe people can, you know, use this as a way of, you know, connecting to whatever they're passionate about or whatever they have a deep caring for in their lives in terms of where they live or, you know, places that maybe need healing. They can also offer this, you know, vibration to where it's needed.
Oh, so beautiful. I can't wait. So we're going to get to that in one sec, but I really would love to, before we move to that, Julian, is talk a little bit about your healing work now. So your offering you call Sound Alchemy, and people come to you for sound healing and transformation for lots of different reasons, don't they? So you've got people who are on a cancer journey, you've got people in mental distress, or you've got people with just vitality issues, or, you know, so can you tell us a little bit about some of the main reasons people seek you out, and also how does it work? So how do your sessions work?
Yeah, so people will come often because they have like a calling to do something for themselves. Like they just get the calling, I really need some healing right now, and you know, maybe they've experienced some of my work and they know, you know, that they really need some energetic support.
Yep.
So they will contact me if it's an individual session. It may be, they might be with a partner. Sometimes women are expecting that, you know, in sort of like the later stages of pregnancy, and they want some support and help to cleanse any fears around birthing and to really bring in a beautiful energy for their child. Sometimes people are going through chemotherapy or the cancer journey and just are really stressed and just want something to help them. Sometimes people come to me because they've been told there's nothing else we can do for you, and to me because, you know, they want to give sound healing a go. And I've had some really amazing results with people who have been in that situation over many years. I've been working with people with cancer for about 15 years. And sometimes the shamanic ceremony, the ritual of smudging them and cleansing them and honoring their journey and just helping them to feel free of the burden of everything that they've been through, can be the turning point where they start to actually, and plus the sound healing and going through all the, you know, attunements through the various frequencies and instruments, they come out feeling enlivened and they come out feeling light.
I completely agree with you. You know, I'm fascinated by, as you know, I'm an energy healer as well. You know, I employ sound usually just to sort of open the gates a little bit. And but I principally run energy through my hands, so I use touch and conversation is my medicine. I believe, back to your earlier point, healing can only work if there is a compassionate heart. There has to be. There can't be any judgment. You know, there can't be any attachment to an end result on the part of the healer. It has to be that real, totally embodied state of the shamanic term, the hollow bone. You've got to get yourself out of the way, don't you, number one? But I'm super fascinated by this world that you're in, where the harmony and the health of the body and the healthy functioning of the cells has a vibrational resonance. And so I think you called it the divine blueprint when we were talking. And so bringing sounds that have a synchronous vibration into that divine blueprint or that highest health blueprint of the cells can bring the cells into harmonic resonance. So have you seen physical healings in your work? You've seen that happen?
Oh, yeah, so many times. I mean, one of the first times I ever used it was in Hawaii, after asking permission and blessings to, you know, take this out into the world. My original teacher was a lady called Maxine Fumagalli. She's a Noongar elder. She's no longer with us, but she basically told me that, you know, in her opinion, the real purpose for the didgeridoo was for healing. And she really encouraged me to use it and explained how it worked and that how we've got a resonance, you know, how the person has a resonance. The didgeridoo is the, you know, basically the communicator between your vibration and their vibration, and how you can pick up a lot just by playing around the person, a bit like Reiki and energy healing. You can sense where the energy is flowing and where it's not, and where it needs support, and, you know, where it's, you know, feeling okay.
Yep.
Anyway, so I was in Maui and I did a session for this woman, and, you know, for the first few years it was just a gift and an energy exchange. And she had had an issue with her back, or I think it was actually a hip, and it had been, you know, displaced for a very long time. And during the session, it suddenly went back into place. Cool. And that was just using sound. And that sort of made me think, whoa, I didn't know it could do that. Like what you said, it's how different is it if someone is so ready for a healing and they're so receptive and they surrender to the process. Obviously, there needs to be the trust to be able to do that. But if someone is so ready and they just allow it and they surrender to the experience, their healing can be as profound, that can be so profound. So I think preparing someone to get into that state, or to encourage them, you know, it's really up to them how deeply allow themselves to, you know, receive the healing. I think almost we need training to learn how to receive healings as much as we need to learn how to give them.
So for people listening to this who may not have access to a practitioner like you, for example, or they don't have a honed skill in any kind of sound, how would you encourage them to start exploring sound in their own way for their own self-healing? What can people do if they're not a didj player or understand the or are trained in the energy arts?
Yeah, so I very much, I mean, the voice is accessible to everybody for most people, using their voice to make sound, to express sound, and to tune into what is the resonance of the imbalance, you know. And this is something that is like, if that had a sound, what would it sound like, you know? If confusion or upset or frustration had a sound, and I mean differently to cathartic sound, I mean vibrational sound. So it might be just a particular sound. It doesn't have to be screaming or shouting or anything like that. It's get to the pure essence of it and work out what is the disharmony, resonate with that disharmony, and after a while, when you honor it, and you, instead of rejecting it, you honor it and you voice it, then it starts to change its vibration. And after a while, that sound that was very authentic to you, that would describe the imbalance, it will no longer sound authentic to make that sound. That's how fast sound changes. And then a new sound comes, and then you work with that sound. And after a while, you tune yourself in that way. But first, you need to really honor the truth of what is going on for you vibrationally.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so that's just a simple way of doing it. In the indigenous way, you know, listening and learning from nature, you know. Mm-hmm. I love imitating nature, and the didgeridoo, the yidaki, has always been used to imitate and honor nature. So that's a beautiful practice as well. People can make, like, how would you make the sound of a river flowing, or how would you make the sound of wind through a tree, or how would you make the sound of things that you love in nature? Or there might be a particular bird call that, you know, you just love the sound of. So that it comes back to that deep listening. You know, up in Arnhem Land, they call it Dadiri, the art of deep listening. And for listeners, they might want to check out the work of Miriam Rose, and she really talks about deep listening.
Beautiful. Julian Silburn, what an incredibly interesting man you are. Thank you so much for chatting with us, with me, on the 21st Century Shaman podcast. And it's such a delight. I'm definitely getting you back. I've got about 40 million more questions I want to ask you. Thank you for your time. And so I'm going to hand it over to you now to play us out with this beautiful healing, earth healing sound that you were given in your dreaming from the spirit of the earth. Thank you, Julian.